Welcome to another episode of Bitches Love Sports. I'm Bitch 2, and this week I am here without Bitch 1, but I do have show notes. So, I just found out earlier today that I was going to be recording by myself, so shout out to Bitch 1. Hope she's feeling better and recovers and gets well very soon. But for me, it's been pretty much a typical day. I just finished watching the Warriors and Bucks game a little bit ago, and wow, I really thought it would be a tougher contest than that. I thought it would be closer, but like by the end of the first half, the Bucks had, I think, like 4 players in double digits by halftime. And it's like, normally we would have been like recording during the time this game was going on. So today I actually got to see it, but I know the Bucks were up like 77-38 going into halftime. And the Warriors did better in the second half, but the Bucks still ended up winning like 118-99. Steph Curry shot 36.4% and ended the game with 12 points, 4 assists, and 8 rebounds. Giannis, on the other hand, shot 64.7% and got a triple-double with 30 points, 11 assists, and 12 rebounds. So the comparison between those two players, yeah, that kind of tells you how it looked between the two teams. It was like, what is going on with the Warriors? And I saw another Warriors game recently where they lost to the Grizzlies. And I remember after that game, somebody saying like, oh, the game would have gone differently if they had Draymond back. And I looked into it and they're like 2-5 without Draymond Green. Like they're 2-5 since he's been gone. And I was like, geez, like everybody, like for the longest time, everybody was talking about like, oh, wait till the Warriors get Klay back. Wait till they get Klay back. And now I'm like, shit, they need Draymond back. He might be the real impact player on the team. You know, they definitely need him back ASAP. And we'll see if they get in a better groove once he is back. You know, he does do a lot on defense, so it makes sense. But when they played the Grizzlies, honestly, I actually wasn't that surprised that the Warriors lost. And I think that's why I didn't think about Draymond being gone after that game, because it didn't really surprise me, honestly. That game was just a couple nights ago, and it was closer. It was like 116-108. But a big part of me really did expect the Grizzlies to win. I had tuned into that game because I wanted to see a good game. I knew it would be a good game. Honestly, with those two teams, I wouldn't have been surprised either way with either outcome, regardless of which team won. Like, we saw the Grizzlies beat the Warriors in the play-in game last year. And even though a lot of people saw that game and thought it was a fluke, right? But what I saw was a young and scrappy team that played almost with the energy of street ball, almost. But they still brought enough finesse and organization to the game to be able to hold their own on a professional court, you know? But they're fast, they're physical, and Ja Morant seems to get more explosive literally with every passing game. Literally. So, to be honest, after this most recent game against the Warriors, I was kind of annoyed at all the professional reporters and analysts who are acting like Ja Morant's skills are new. Like, the stuff that he's doing is new. Like, has he gotten even better? Yes. But he's been good. He's been explosive. He's been doing impressive shit on the court. The Grizzlies didn't just become one of the most entertaining teams to watch. They've been this way since last season. For real. I think maybe folks didn't notice just because, like, even though they made the playoffs, their record wasn't that great, honestly. Plus, they're in a smaller market, so a lot of people just weren't checking for them. But for the people whose actual job it is to pay attention to who's hot and who's not in the world of sports, I don't know how they miss this, honestly. Like, people are tweeting like, oh my God, I've been sleeping on the Grizzlies. And I'm like, still? Like, you're just now realizing like, oh shit, the Grizzlies are good. Like, come on. But anyway, they're seeing it now. And don't get me wrong, like, the Suns are still my heart and soul, right? That is still absolutely the case. I want to see him win it all this year, the Suns. But the Grizzlies, I get excited when I see that they're going to be on TV. Ja Morant is not even the only skilled player on that team. Like, the whole squad is fun to watch. So it's like, if you haven't caught a Grizzlies game, like, consider this me putting you up on game. Like, you need to catch a Grizzlies game. You need to watch some of these Ja Morant highlights. You need to watch the Grizzlies, especially if they're playing like a team that people know for being good. You know, like the Nets, like the Warriors. I don't know who's coming up in their schedule, but like, yes, it's a good game to watch. They're a good team to watch. Honestly, with the energy and the fearlessness and just the raw talent that they bring to the court, I think they're a threat to beat anyone, honestly. I mean, I really don't think that there's a team they can't beat on any given night. Like, in a best of seven series, that's a little bit different. In a best of seven, it wouldn't be unreasonable to bet against them in favor of a team with bigger stars or more veterans. But on any given night, like, I'd give them a shot against any team, honestly. They're going to pose a challenge. And there are just some teams that I believe are more likely to meet that challenge, especially in a series. But they're fun to watch regardless. So if you're not watching the Grizzlies, if you haven't seen Ja Morant's highlights, get it together. Start watching. Catch the next one. So on that note, that brings us to, of course, everybody's favorite part. I don't actually know if it's anybody's favorite part, but shout outs and call outs. So first shout out goes to Sue Bird. So if you haven't heard, she's not retiring. Yay for all the WNBA fans and Sue Bird fans. The fans asked for one more year and she obliged. And not only are we going to get one more year, but we're also going to get a documentary. As reported by Matt Donnelly for Variety.com, the life and remarkable career of WNBA star Sue Bird will be the subject of a new documentary from Oscar winner Alex Gibney's Jigsaw Productions and Jay Ellis's Black Bar Mitzvah. Sue Bird in the Clutch is underway, capturing the final chapter of her 19-year career in basketball. Promising full access, the film will document her record-setting 5th Olympic gold medal, the 2022 WNBA season, life with fiancé Megan Rapinoe, advocating for social justice, and her post-retirement plans. We're excited to give this once-in-a-generation athlete the send-off she deserves, said Gibney. It's an amazing opportunity to explore the impact of Sue and the wider NBA, not just on the game of basketball, but on social justice, activism, and women in sports. So, y'all know how much we love sports documentaries and behind-the-scenes content, so we'll definitely be watching and we'll definitely be catching that as soon as it's available. The next shout out goes to Naomi Osaka. And this shout out is for returning to the Australian Open as the defending champion. So if you've been following Naomi Osaka or if you listen to this podcast regularly, you've heard us mention that she recently said she didn't know when she was going to return back to competitive tennis. And she had started practicing. But, you know, even though she's a defending champion, it wasn't certain if she would be back at the Australian Open because of what she had said in an interview a few months ago. But in a more recent interview, she said this: "I feel like for me, I only really have one major goal this year, and it's completely unrelated to results and stuff like that. For me, I just want to feel like every time I step on the court, I'm having fun. I can walk off the court knowing that even if I lost, I tried as hard as I could." So I really hope that she figures that out. And there are a couple of reasons that I really want to see that happen for her. One of those reasons is that with all the time off that she's had and the time that she's had to reflect and really think about her career, if she's come to the conclusion that this is something that needs to happen for her well-being and for the longevity of her career, I absolutely want to see that happen for her. Another reason is that, yeah, she is an elite athlete. There are a lot of people who look up to her. And so if she's able to provide guidance on how to approach being competitive with some sense of balance, I think that could be good for a lot of people. That's just one of those things that's just good to make as common knowledge as possible. Because, you know, myself, for example, I don't see myself ever not wanting to compete. I don't see myself ever not identifying as a competitor. However, I do recognize that, like, there is a need for balance, especially like for me as a coach. I need to be able to relate to people who maybe don't put as much weight on competition and winning as I do. As competitors, we tend to put a lot of weight and a lot of emphasis on whether we win or lose. And sometimes it's really hard not to determine our value based on that, you know, and not just in our sport, like in life, you know. And we've seen Naomi struggle with that a little bit, right? So with that being a goal of hers, I definitely hope that she's able to, you know, figure out some tips and tricks regarding that. Even if she does just keep them to herself, I really want that for her. Another goal she said that she has is that she has a goal of never crying in the press room again. I hope she achieves that goal as well. And it's not because I think there's anything wrong with crying. It has more to do with the fact that from everything that I've been reading and observing about her endeavors off the court, it really does seem like we're kind of missing out because the focus is so much on her mental health and her ups and downs and how she's dealing with her tennis career. Now, I'm not sure why she made it a goal to not cry in front of the press anymore, but part of me wants to hope that it's for the same reason. Part of me wants to think that she wants to present herself as a multifaceted person with a message that's worth hearing and the ability to make an impact, and maybe she wants to put the focus on something else. And I think that's relatable, really. I think a lot of people who have been through a tough time in life know what it's like to hit that point where you're ready to move past that state. You no longer want to be defined by your trauma. You know, you want people to talk about something else, ask about something else. You want them to think of something else when they see you. And quite frankly, as much as vulnerable people are praised for their honesty and bravery, sometimes those vulnerable moments are a little bit embarrassing, you know? But anyway, I'm going to stop projecting here and just reinforce the point that I'm happy for Naomi, and I will definitely be rooting for her and watching the Australian Open as much as possible. So, regarding her time away from tennis, she said, "During the off season, I just hung out with my friends and talked to my family a lot. I felt like that was a way of decompressing the pressure I had on myself. Then I just slowly started to regain the feeling of love that I had towards the game. It's not like it ever completely went away, but I felt like it got overshadowed by a lot of emotions that I was feeling just by constantly playing year after year." So I think even that might explain part of why it's her goal not to cry. Maybe it's not so much that it's her goal not to cry, but maybe she wants to get back to a place where her emotions aren't overshadowing the joy that she finds in tennis. And not crying in the press room is just one measurable way of doing that. So Naomi Osaka recently participated in the Melbourne Somerset and ended up withdrawing from her semifinal match because of an ab injury. Now, I haven't seen any details about the nature or the severity of the injury, but she did withdraw from the Somerset in order to rest and prepare for the Australian Open. And since she's participating in the Open, I'm assuming that she's good to go. So the Australian Open will begin on January 17th and conclude on January 30th. And in the U.S., that means the first matches will actually take place on January 16th here. So we don't have a time or viewing information for Naomi Osaka's first match, but we do know that it will be against unranked Colombian tennis player Camila Osorio. And Naomi Osaka is currently ranked 13th, even with all her time off. She's still ranked. Now, there are a few names that you won't hear when we're talking about the Australian Open, and that'll be mainly Serena Williams and Roger Federer. They will not be participating this year. It's kind of weird to have a major where you don't hear their names, but I mean, they've been around for a long time. They have blessed fans with their gifts for a long time. So whether it's time off or retirement, they've earned it. All right, the next topic is a call out, and we are calling out Antonio Brown. Now, we didn't end up talking about this last week, and I didn't even think about it until after we were done recording the episode. I totally meant to talk about it with Bitch One, but afterwards I got a message from someone who was like, "Hey, what's y'all's opinion on the whole Antonio Brown situation?" And I was like, dang, I didn't even bring it up. So I'm gonna give a quick backstory for anybody who might be listening and is not familiar with Antonio Brown or what recently happened with him. So, recently in the Buccaneers game against the Jets, towards the end of the third quarter, Antonio Brown spontaneously removed his jersey and his pads threw it into the crowd, and did shirtless jumping jacks through the end zone on his way to the locker room, never to be seen in a Bucs jersey again. So in the press conference after the game, Coach Bruce Arians only said that he was no longer part of the team. And then Tom Brady said that he hoped AB would get the help that he needs, whatever that meant. But after that, Twitter psychologists all over the world started weighing in on what was wrong with Antonio Brown and what should be done about it. And not only because of this one incident, but they connected it with other controversies that have been associated with Antonio Brown. So here's a little history lesson for the people who are listening and might be a little bit less familiar with Antonio Brown. He was drafted in the sixth round of the 2010 NFL draft by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He ended up being a seven-time Pro Bowler. There were two times where he was a receiving yards leader of the NFL. There were two times where he was the NFL receptions leader. And also, he was the NFL receiving touchdowns leader in 2018. So basically, for several years, he built up this awesome career and became known as one of the best receivers in the league. And honestly, he is really, really good. But a lot of people say that that is the reason for him getting so many second and third and quadruple chances despite all of his antics. So let's get into those. While he is with the Steelers, he wasn't getting along well with Coach Tomlin or Ben Roethlisberger. So there was a point where even though he had signed a four-year contract extension, he requested a trade after the second year of that extension. And supposedly things had been rough for years, but according to sources, Tomlin dealt with it because of on-the-field production. On the field productivity. But in 2018, in week 17, I believe, he ended up being benched for skipping some mandatory team prep activities. And that fueled the conflict, and he demanded to be traded. And then he also did some petty and distracting things on social media around the same time. And so eventually he was traded to the Oakland Raiders for third and fifth round draft picks. So they didn't give up a lot to get a receiver who was really, really good. But they also ended up not really getting very much in return because he had only been with the Raiders for a few months when he ended up being fined $54,000 for skipping team events and practices. And there was a heated confrontation between him and the Raiders GM where he called the GM a cracker. And supposedly he almost got physical with the GM. Accounts of that particular event said that like teammates had to like hold him back basically. But then he apologized and people thought all was well, but it really wasn't. The Raiders ended up voiding $29 million in guaranteed money from his contract. And then he demanded to be released. And so they released him, and he ended up signing a one-year contract with the New England Patriots, apparently at Tom Brady's request. He was literally with the Patriots for only a few days before Brittany Taylor, who, according to some reports, is a former coach of his, filed a lawsuit against him for three cases of sexual harassment. Now, Brown wasn't prosecuted because the allegations were outside the statute of limitations. But a second accuser eventually came forward in a Sports Illustrated report, complete with accounts of menacing text messages from Antonio Brown, and she ended up suing him as well. But apparently that lawsuit was because he owed her over $11,000 in unpaid fees. So the Patriots ended up cutting him shortly after that. He ended up only playing one game with them. So fast forward to January 2020, when the police were called to Antonio Brown's home several times for domestic disputes. And it was at that time that the Hollywood Police Department finally stopped him from being involved with their youth league. So all the other accusations, nah, he was still working with the kids. But the domestic disputes, apparently, that was too much for the Hollywood Police Department to deal with. They end up going so far as to send money back to him that he had donated and I think filing a restraining order. So yeah, there was some drama there. And then that same month, he and an accomplice attacked a moving truck driver. I don't really know the story behind that, honestly. I don't know why they did it, but it happened. He was arrested on felony charges of battery and burglary. He pleaded no contest and received 2 years of probation. He was also ordered to undergo 100 hours of community service and a 13-week anger management counseling program and a psychological evaluation. After all of that, Tom Brady still brought this man to Tampa Bay and even allowed him to live in his home for a little while. So with Tampa, Brown signed a one-year contract, ended up playing 8 games in his first season with the Buccaneers, caught 45 passes for 483 yards and 4 touchdowns, and helped the Bucs win a Super Bowl over Kansas City. So that first year went okay. So Tampa Bay brought him back for another year, and in December, a former personal chef who apparently was still owed money by Antonio Brown revealed that Antonio Brown's vaccination card was a fake. So he lied about his vaccination status and faked medical documents, which people have been prosecuted for, you know? So that was, of course, controversial. And then in early January, we had the situation that I talked about at the beginning of this spiel, where I talked about him quitting in the middle of the game. So now Brown says that his outburst was caused by the fact that Bruce Arians wanted him to play while he was injured. Brown says that he told Bruce Arians that he was not healthy enough to play, that he hadn't healed enough, and that he didn't want to jeopardize his future availability. But according to Brown, Arians became upset and told him that he was done. And Arians said that he didn't know about the injury and that that conversation that Brown recounted never happened. So when people ask my opinion on this, it's like, as much as I like to stand up for athletes and I preach the importance of physical well-being, I just really have a hard time believing anything Antonio Brown says. Because, you know, I'm one of those people that when people ask me about situations like this, I try to like play through it in my head and think about like what makes sense, what actually fits together. So I'm thinking about what we do know, what we've seen, and what various parties have said. And to me, honestly, it just seems kind of odd to rage quit a job as a professional athlete over something like that, especially considering that Tom Brady, someone who is not only a leader on the team, but someone who is very respected across the entire NFL, league-wide. He's been in your corner after allegations, after criminal activity, after convictions, after faking your vaccination status. He was in your corner through all of that. So it just seems like you might have tried to plead your case to him first before just running off the field like that. Right? Like, if you had somebody that powerful in your corner with that much influence, who's that respected in your corner, it seems like you would say, like, hey, Tom, buddy, I'm hurt. I can't go out there. Please talk to coach. It seems like you would do that first, at least, you know? So there's that. Plus, I don't trust people who don't pay the people who work for them. I also don't trust people who antagonistically harass survivors of sexual assault. And he just overall seems like a bad dude. He just does. He might be telling the truth here, but I'm not about to cape for him. Not on this. So that's all I have as far as my thoughts on this. I feel like Bitch One's thoughts would be the same, very similar, only maybe way more passionate, more cursing. Like, but I feel like she'd be in the same boat. Like, neither of us are going to cape for him on this. Where, like, yes, we're all about athletes standing up for themselves, taking care of themselves. So if he was hurt, like, yeah, that would be unfortunate if the coach tried to get him to play anyway. But we're not about to, like, you know, go on a crusade for Antonio Brown. That's not happening. So there's that. So let's see. We've talked about Naomi Osaka. We've talked about Sue Bird. We've talked about Antonio Brown. Now, of course, before I sign off, y'all know me, I have to say a few words about my Cowboys. Now, in my last episode, okay, I expressed some concern over the Cowboys appearing undisciplined and inconsistent. And I'm not about to walk that back. I stand by what I said. But to clarify, one, I was mostly referring to the offense. And two, I still expect them to win against the 49ers, even amidst all that. I'm even tempted to say that if they do win, it'll be mostly due to the efforts of the Cowboys defense. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the 49ers being a physical team, and even people throwing around the idea that Kyle Shanahan is going to be able to run plays that will confuse Micah Parsons and throw him off his game. So that last bit especially, that one really irks me when people bring up Micah specifically, because I don't want to say it like this. It's like they're referring to him like a normal person. Like, of course, he's a human being, right? But when it comes to who he is and what he is as a player, like, Micah isn't just talented. He is versatile and he is studious. He hasn't gotten where he's gotten by being some impulsive rookie who just gets lucky and just so happens to get the best of these professional quarterbacks. He's not just getting lucky when he gets these sacks. He's observant. He has studied his craft. He has put work into his game. So when people are like, oh, Kyle Shanahan is going to draw up something that's going to throw him off his game, like, you know, Kyle Shanahan is going to take advantage of Micah Parsons' aggression, I'm like, really? Like, y'all think he's just some impulsive player who's just going to be, like, so hungry for a sack that he's just going to fall for any old thing? Like basically, people are saying it like it would be easy to do that. And I'm just like, no, that's just not Micah. Now, on that note, there's a USA Today article by Jory Epstein about the sort of mentorship relationship between DeMarcus Ware and Micah Parsons. And so I'm going to read you one section of the article. It states, Ware and Parsons exchange tips periodically, including when Parsons hit somewhat of a mental rookie wall in October and sought change. Ware, a 9-time Pro Bowler, told the rookie, who has since claimed his first Pro Bowl berth, study the plays early in the week and then opponent tendencies. Divulge those tendencies to scout team players to ensure maximal practice time and mental readiness by game day. Parsons emerged refreshed from a Cowboys bye and ripped off a terrifying stretch in which he posted 9.5 sacks and 3 forced fumbles in 6 weeks. Ware credits, in part, Parsons' understanding tricks to maintaining mental focus. He's so smart sometimes he gets bored, Ware said. He'll get out there sometimes and it'll come easy to him. That's the time when you dial in and be smarter and even more consistent with the mental focus. You've got to almost give yourself so much information that you get overwhelmed. Then you figure out how to be comfortable in those uncomfortable situations. So he's not just fast, y'all. He's not just strong. Micah Parsons is a complete player aiming to excel in every aspect of the game. Like, I love listening to his interviews. And I love listening to his interviews because the way he talks about his game and the work that he puts in, it really, really resonates with me. So listen to what he says when a reporter asks him about the 49ers playing bully ball.
The 49ers are known to play bully ball. Can you bully a lion?
No, you can't. It's actually funny you say that. I was having fun with the guys, and I was telling them, like, I'm from Harrisburg, where the bullies get bullied, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's a bully in every gym. There's a bully everywhere you go. But at one point, it's going to take someone to stand up and, you know, and fight. And I ain't never backed down from a challenge, so I would never say you can bully a lion, ever.
But just attacking the physicality, they have a physical running style with their running offense. And how do you guys, are you guys ready for this challenge of the defense?
I mean, we don't got a choice but to be ready, Clarence. I mean, the game on Sunday, we got about 4 more days left of preparation. And I don't think nobody's going to hand their equipment and say, hey, we can't beat the 49ers. Let's go home.
So they said, can you bully a lion? Now, the reason why he made reference to a lion specifically is because Micah refers to himself as the humble beast. And usually the imagery that goes along with that is of him as a lion. There have been several press conferences where he's talked about or he's made parallels between his style of play and the tendencies of a lion in the jungle or a lion in the wild. So that's where that comes from. When he talks about not backing down from a challenge, like, how do you not, like, how do you not get kind of fired up just like listening to that? Like, I don't even have a game or anything coming up. And I'm just like, yeah, I love it. You know, those kind of statements inspire confidence. You know, I think some people are expecting to see him act more like a rookie. They want to see him get nervous. They want to see him make mistakes. They want to see him get flustered. And I'm not saying that he's perfect by any means. I'm not saying that he's never made mistakes. But when it comes to like that typical rookie behavior that we think about, like, no, we don't see that from Micah. Like, he's known as the humble beast for a reason. Yes, he gave himself that name, to my knowledge, I think. I'm not sure. But there's a reason that people are willing to call him that, you know? And I think it speaks to who he is. Like, a lot of times, the thing that I like about the humble beast moniker is that it really speaks to the true meaning of being a beast and the true meaning of being humble. Because sometimes people will conflate being humble with being timid. And they'll conflate being a beast with being arrogant, you know? And so he's humble in the sense that he recognizes the need to put in work and to keep putting in work and the fact that the work is never really done. And so that's where the humility comes from. But he's not timid. If you watch him play, he's very bold. He's very fast. He's one of those people that the way that he plays, you would expect him to be arrogant. You would expect him to just like walk off the field, walk out of the stadium and just be feeling himself and just think he's above everybody because he plays with that much intensity and aggression and confidence, you know. But that's where the beast part comes in. The beast part comes in because he is willing to actually do the work. He's willing to get his hands dirty. He likes to hunt. That's where the beast part comes in. It doesn't come from him, you know, being arrogant and having a big ego. It comes from the results that he actually produces. How can you not respect that, you know? And so later they asked him about how he might prepare differently for this upcoming game. And I really loved his answer to this. So listen to this.
It seems like the 49ers attack the edge more than a lot of teams. Outside contain is always an emphasis for you guys, but is that being discussed a little bit more this week? And what are the keys going against this offense in that way?
I don't think it has to be discussed because at the end of the day, I think the standard is the standard. And I think, you know, you need to hold the standard regardless of the opponent. And I mean, as a kid, stop the run and then let the monsters eat on third down.
The standard is the standard. That's what he said. The standard is the standard. And I respect the hell out of that because sometimes, especially since they haven't played this team this season, you know, when people are playing a new opponent or when people start listening to a lot of the chatter from fans or critics or other observers, they'll start to think that they need to do something different. They need to do something extra. Or, you know, oh, it's a big game coming up and I got to do these other pregame rituals and I got to change up my routine. And a lot of times that doesn't actually serve any benefit as far as your performance, you know, because all it's doing is introducing all these other stimuli, giving more opportunities to make mistakes, honestly. So not only is he confident in his ability to prepare for this game, he's confident in the preparation and the work that he's done all season. Like, he has been so true to his own standard that even in a playoff game, even when what's on the line is win or go home, even when your performance could contribute to whether or not this is the last game of the season for your team, he's like, no, the standard is a standard. He has that much faith in his standard. Standard is a standard, even if it's the playoffs. Even if it's this team that everybody says is going to play bully ball, the standard is a standard. I love that so much. And you only get there by practicing and putting so much work into your craft that you can have that level of faith in your standard. You cannot get that confident in your own standards if you're only practicing when you feel like it, if you're skipping workouts, if you're not watching film, if you don't know your opponent. It's impossible to develop that level of confidence, you know? How could you be confident? You have nothing to be confident in. But when you're doing what you need to do, when you know that you've checked every box that it's possible for you to check, that's when you can go into a high stakes game and just be like, the standard is the standard. I don't, like, not only am I not doing anything different, I don't have to, because my standard is such that I'm going to perform in a way that's going to benefit my team. I'm going to do what I need to do for us to win. standard is a standard. Oh, I love that. I can go on about this forever, y'all. I love Micah. I really do. As if that wasn't obvious. So when Micah talks this way, I trust him to stick to that because I've seen it. Like, Micah has never given us a reason to doubt how he's going to show up come game time. Now, Dak, on the other hand, was talking in a similar fashion in a recent press conference. So I just want y'all to listen to what Dak had to say.
Dak, how much do you try not to have the pressure on your shoulders in terms of trying to get this team to where it really wants to go?
I mean, I do what I normally do. I don't know necessarily why people have labeled the word pressure as such a bad thing, honestly. I think it creates high expectations and high standards, and that usually creates high results. So for me, it's just about being who I am, staying true to that, knowing who I am, preparing the same way that I have and that I do, trusting the people around me, trusting the play callers and my preparation, and then just going out there and playing the game that I love without any hesitation.
All right, so I will say this. I agree with what Dak is saying about pressure. You know, a lot of times people do talk about pressure like it's a bad thing. And in actuality, what determines whether or not it's good or bad is how you respond to it. So pressure in and of itself isn't bad. And as a matter of fact, sometimes it can produce some really good results if you respond in the right way, which also comes from the right level of preparation and having systems in place. But that's a different conversation. But the thing is, it's a little bit harder to trust Dak when he says it because basically the same reason I can trust Micah because of what I've seen is the same reason that it's hard to trust Dak because of what I've seen. The thing that concerns me about the offense isn't what they are saying. You know, it's not what the offensive players are saying in their press conferences. It's what they're not saying. I have not heard any of them directly address or explain the inconsistent performance that we've seen basically since Dak came back from his calf injury. Now, maybe there are just some things that we as fans don't need to know. Even on my own team, my own roller derby team, there are some things that if someone asked me, I wouldn't want to discuss outside of the team. So, I mean, it's cool if they don't want to talk about it or if they only want to provide the types of answers engineered to not make headlines, even though that's really hard for any member of the Dallas Cowboys. But if you do that, then you've got to understand, like, yeah, this is why some fans are going to lack confidence. Now, what I will say, though, is that I do like what I see from Dak as a leader. Like, I know it may seem... what's the word? It might be easy for some people to write off that as nothing to write home about, because it's like while we hear him talked about as a good leader, we don't see him do anything that's just like, oh my God, I've never seen any type of leader do something like that. You know, he gives good answers. He seems to say the right things. He seems to do the right things. It's one of those situations that people talk about, like where when somebody's doing their job really well or when something's happening the way that it's supposed to go, you don't even notice. And so that's the kind of leader that he is. You don't notice what he does because he's not running around putting out fires, being super emotional. Like, he's doing what he's supposed to do. So a lot of it doesn't really stand out, you know, because there's no story there. He's just doing what he's supposed to do as a leader. But I like what I see from him as a leader. I like the fact that his message is like, you know, we need to continue preparing like we always do. We don't need to be afraid of the pressure. We don't need to listen to the outside critics and let them change us. Like, we're going to play our game. I like the fact that he's sharing that message. And honestly, the Cowboys have all the talent and the weapons necessary to beat damn near any team. Really. I really do believe that. Like, I believe that if they can get past the low energy that usually occurs when the game doesn't get off to a perfect start, they'll be fine. And I also think that a week is enough time to address those types of mental issues, to at least give yourself some cues to focus on if they do start to pop up. It might not become second nature, but that's enough time to address them and figure out ways to handle them. So I heard someone earlier this week say, oh, you can't make a team more physical in a week. And I don't think that they actually need to do that. Now, I hope they're preparing themselves for a physical game because, you know, you just need to have a certain level of understanding that, like, yes, these dudes are going to come out. They like to hit hard. They like to move fast. They like to be very physical. Everything that goes along with them being a physical football team, we're going to see it. We need to be ready for that. But when it comes to tangible improvements that can be made by the Cowboys, I really do think those need to come more from the mental side and getting the team on the same page. If they can eliminate pre-snap penalties, they'll be doing themselves a huge favor. Just something like that. Some people are even predicting that CD will get more targets because of the type of coverage that they're anticipating from the 49ers. Now, of course, I would love to see that for my own selfish reasons. But even in an attempt to be at least a little bit objective, I'll say this. The inconsistent play did seem to occur around the same time that CD's targets started to decline. So I know correlation doesn't equal causation. I'm just saying. But real talk, if possible, I'd like to see Amari and Zeke get involved early, and then Pollard and CD get some opportunities not long after that. I think it's going to be important to get all those people involved. Now, there have been whispers of a lack of chemistry between Dak and CD. Neither of them has said anything to support that, but it does seem that way. Like, why isn't Dak targeting CD? But for one thing, chemistry isn't something that can be built in a week. So we may or may not see a change in that. And also, if I'm honest, Dak does have some reasons to be less than confident in CD as a target. So I do hope that CD does something this week during practice to increase that confidence that Dak might have in him. But as far as that, like, real authentic chemistry, I'm just going to put that on my wish list for next season and hope for the best. So all that being said, y'all know I don't like to make predictions, but I really do think the Cowboys can win this weekend. I expect them to win, and yes, I will be surprised and disappointed if they don't win. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, they have the talent, they have the weapons necessary to do it. It's going to come down to whether or not they're mentally ready and if they can just not make some of the mistakes that they've made in the past. I trust the defense to do their job. And I even trust the offense to do their job. I just don't trust them as much as the defense. I keep trying to think of like some other way to say it, but that's just that, you know. But from what we've seen of them at their best, not even at their absolute best. I don't even think we've seen the Cowboys' absolute best, honestly. But from what we've seen from them when they're good, like, yeah, if they pull that out of the hat, they've got it. I'm not afraid of the 49ers in that situation. So we'll see what happens. But we've got games Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So I really hope y'all are excited for the next few days as I am. Plan your snacks, plan your drinks. I know a lot of us invest a lot of energy into these teams as fans. But just remember to have fun with this. It's entertainment. Sports is literally an entertainment product. We have no control over what happens on the field as fans. We have no control, and it only affects us as far as we let it. So have fun, root for your favorites, talk shit to the fans of your rivals, drink responsibly, drive soberly, tip your waitresses, bartenders, shop girls, and dancers. Be a good fan, and don't be the reason that people start to hate your team. So on that note, I'll see y'all next week when hopefully I'll be back with Bitch One to talk about Drake and Hot Sauce and the Australian Open and hopefully a Cowboys victory. So that's it for this episode of Bitches Love Sports. I'm Bitch Two, and I'm out.